Here with Governor Victor Attia at his office in downtown Portland, Oregon, the interviewer for the Oregon Historical Society's Clark Hansen, August 18th, 1993, and this is tape 54, side one.
We had this event, and these were supporters. I don't recall exactly what it was, but we were down there, Doris and I. And then, earlier than you would normally leave, at that time it was not Lieutenant Holbrook, the state police aide said, I think we should go now. And then they had the car, the state patrol car, parked on the side of the Mendel's down on the second level when we got in and went home. And they told me that they'd observed somebody climbing up the hill across from the then Mendel's with a rifle. Now, they had no idea what it was all about, but this is right across the street from where the governor-elect is. And so they just wanted to get us out of there while they did research. And that was the first time, and so I, you know, that at this point I'm saying, okay, I've got to get Dolores adjusted to this concept. And Bonnie told her what was all about, and she accepted it very well, and why we had done what we did. So those things happened, but I just said, I can't hurt myself with my God. I know it was tough duty to tell a young man, I'm not going to worry about it, you worry about it. I got to tell you another story. I don't know if I told you this. It still frightens Lon when he thinks about it. We were at the bankers' annual meeting, and this was in Fellowship. That particular night was Western night, and so the attendees were wearing Western gear. The help there was wearing Western gear. And so we went in for the reception to start with, and then normally, you know, they blink the lights, now time for dinner. But in this case, in the spirit of the West, the fellow that runs the dining for meetings, he fired a pistol at blanks. Well, they told everybody, but they hadn't told Lon.
Oh, gee.
So, bang, bang, and Lon, you know, he just instinctively, he's reaching for his gun, he's heading toward the noise. He said, fortunately, the guy was just outside the door, so he gave a second or two to kind of understand what was happening. But Lon gets nervous when he talks about it now. As I say, it's tough on a young man. He's a good man. Saying goodbye to him was the hardest job I had.
Is that right?
Well, I spent probably more time with him than I did with Dolores in 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're coming and going all the time, and he's driving me. And he's a good man.
So you still talk to him occasionally?
Oh, yes. Saw him Sunday at our party. He's still with the state police and mm-hmm. the fish and game section. Likes what he's doing. And he's really a very bright, a very smart, and very professional state police.
How are they selected? Do they go from governor to governor, or does each one have a different one?
All I can tell you is my case. I had the superintendent selected, I think three, maybe four, troopers for which I would make some choice. And so I'd spend, I don't know, a week or 10 days or 2 weeks with each of them and then choose one. And I did. That was not a good choice, as it turned out.
Hmm.
So that didn't last too long, and asked to have him be relieved. I'm still trying to work myself into the idea that somebody's driving me somewhere, because I've been driving myself for all those years. I'm still not adjusted to all of this. So I start out by, I said, well, let me drive myself. Well, that went on for maybe 2 or 3 weeks. But that, I soon saw how foolish that was, because you're thinking about the next deal, you're thinking about what you left. It just didn't make any sense to do my own driving. So then I'm going somewhere, and they start providing troopers. And finally the superintendent, it was really tough because they've got a schedule for troopers, and they're on the highway, and they're from different hours, you know, and stuff. It was really good. It was tough on the troopers, and it was tough on the state police. And John Williams said, Governor, pick someone. And then out of that came Lon Holbrook. I had two. I had Lon as full-time, Lon Holbrook, and then Daryl Birding was a relief. Mm-hmm. And he would relieve Lon, and he would also drive Dolores. When Goldschmidt came in, I got it just like big time New York or Washington, D.C. They've got a team of six or seven troopers, and they've got cars in front and cars in back, and all, you know, the whole works. That doesn't make any real sense, not knowing it doesn't. But anyway, I had to, and perfectly happy. But that's the way it is, how you come with the game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, going back to your school plan, some of the school officials said that they had a hard time supporting your measure because they said that it wouldn't address the inequities in the taxable wealth and other structures of the structural problems of the Oregon school finance system. I think you've talked a little bit about that. Others questioned whether there would be any momentum to solve those problems once the immediate problem of preventing school closures was resolved.
Well, for those, the latter, mm-hmm. they want sales tax. And so they want to make things as bad as they can in order to someday get a sales tax. That's what these folks are coming for. The others, I told you way back in the tape, there is no perfect tax plan and no one will ever have one. Mm-hmm. Me or anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Oregonian said that keeping schools from closing by giving each district a tax base equal to its prior year operating levy would not reduce property taxes. They would continue to rise each year since the government's proposal would allow a 5% annual increase in each tax base without the vote of the people. Did you see that as a potential?
That's true. Uh-huh. But you see, you have to go back to what history was. Property taxes have recently really had even the spark of the ballot issue 5 went up horrendously fast. I mean, they were going up rapidly. Mm-hmm. And it was that kind of control. Again, we come back to what's relief. Is it prospective relief? Or is it relief immediately? So the Oregonian's view, it's immediate.
Right.
My view is out there in front. Mm-hmm. At 5 or 6%. That's in the Constitution. More than half the school districts in Oregon have that mm-hmm. provision mm-hmm. already mm-hmm. because they have their tax bases. And they could raise it 5.9% without going to a vote of the people. That already was existing and had been going on.
Well, they also said that the plan would tend to penalize school districts in Oregon that have done a good job of educating and encouraging constituents to adopt new tax bases because it would reduce their ability to improve facilities or programs and reward those districts that have done a poor job in selling education to the voters.
Well, the reward really wasn't there. Mm-hmm. First of all, they were relating, others as well, not just the Oregonians. How much you spend equals the quality. And that's not true. Mm-hmm. I recall going into schools around Oregon that the schoolhouse would be nothing like the palaces that we have in the Tri-County area. And the question is, are these folks, these poor kids, are they getting as good an education? And they are. They're getting a good education. They go to college from all over the state. You know, they have good GPAs. Just to say how many dollars you spend equals the quality, that is not really true. The concept of adopting the school base says we will accept the school base that the people in the district accept. Again, what the Oregonian was saying is, yes, there's a school district somewhere that is, a, let's say, 1.5%, and Portland's at 3. And this 1.5 district can't get to 3, which is true, in the plan that I proposed. That's what the Oregonian was saying.
Right.
But then you come back to how much you spend equals quality. And I don't happen to agree that that's the case.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, this was, I think, the 14th or 15th effort since 1969 to change the school.
At a minimum.
Their school tax plan, there was a sales tax plan of 1969 and also the sales taxes in 1983 and 85, all of which were failed or found unconstitutional. And then there was the OEA plan in 1970, the McCall plan in 71, the Farm Bureau plan in 72, the two-tiered plan in 73, and so on. And of course, property tax limits were attempted in 68, 78, 80, 82, and 84, all of which failed. Did you think at the time that your plan would have any better chance of success?
No, not necessarily, but I'm not one to say no for somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
You work on the odds. But incidentally, that what you were just recounting gives me the opportunity to say, for so many times, people would say, why don't they do something in the legislature?
Right.
And my answer is, they have done something. You just haven't voted for it. You voted it down. So, well, you know, why do you blame them for the fact that you voted it down? The other one I mentioned before, you know, you've got to do something about my property taxes. And as a legislator, I'd say, I didn't raise your property taxes. You did. There's a gap in understanding. It's unfair to say that the legislature didn't do something.
Mm-hmm.
And what is usually the case is, yeah, I wanted something, but this isn't what I wanted, whatever this was. The only time they finally got together is just kind of. Now, there's a lot of people that I know voted for, and these are the ones that want a sales tax.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, we got to get those people to do something. I said, well, no, wait a minute. This is before the election. I'm talking to my business friends. You're trying to tell me that the people of Oregon, if they adopt ballot measure 5, which of course they did, and they said, I want to cut my property taxes. Now you say, I want them to do something, which means sales tax. You want the legislature to come back and say, now folks, that you've cut your property taxes, please vote for this handy-dandy increase in taxes. I said, they're going to say you're crazy. I just voted to reduce my taxes. What are you coming before? They didn't want me to raise taxes. They still didn't see it.
Hmm.
Yet it's a practical, you know, practical approach, but it's realistic, and that's where we are today.
Do you think it's any different today? Do you think
No.
Do you think the outcome will be any different?
Not today, no, huh? I said to several, including the governor, on the opening of the session. I was there early and went to the coffee shop, and then I knocked on the governor's door. And, you know, I said, you know, I don't want to interrupt because I know I'm getting ready myself to address the legislature. No, come on in. And so we chatted, and I told Governor Roberts, I said, you know, I know we've got a problem. I know we have to do something about it. But I don't think Oregonians are going to really do anything about it until they believe there's a problem. And if they believe there's a problem, I have no doubt they will respond to it. But today they don't believe there's a problem. When the governor was called that special session,
right.
And I can hear her saying, you know, this is what the people want. And I'm saying to myself, Governor, who have you been listening to? There's nobody I talk to about that. And
but then they turned around and blamed her for not doing anything.
Well, it's not a matter of not doing something. You do something in an orderly way.
Uh-huh.
First of all, on a special session, she did not talk to the legislature. And you'd think someone who was a legislator would understand that. After all, whatever she proposes has to go through the legislative body.
Of course, you were criticized for doing the same thing.
My special sessions were all pretty well planned.
I guess on your special session, but in terms of your, you know, like what we were just talking about on this plan.
I know, but there's a difference. I'm not sure there was a difference. And the difference really is that when she called him into a special session, she just never, ever talked to them. And that is a serious mistake. And as I say that one, I said to myself, why did she do that? She's been a legislator. She understands these things. But she didn't. She just presumed that I'm the governor. This is what I say. Go do it. And I wouldn't have them operate that way, even with me as a governor. And so the actually, my thought at that time was, I'm glad that they didn't pass something out. Because when her schedule was, as I recall, they had a vote in November or October or something like that. And then the people was certainly going to turn that down. And having done that, you can't really address the issue again for at least a couple, 2-3 years. So we're going to have to suffer with that. Now the same thing's going to happen. Pointed out and relayed that the sales tax is coming out, the people are certainly going to turn it down. And again, you will not be able to address that issue again for at least another 3 years. Because they say, you can't come back next year and say, hey, we just voted on that. So now you build another barrier to passage. And Oregon's going to have to suffer. So the first thing you have to do is prove to Oregon that you've got a problem. And the plan that Larry Campbell had, which finally became very foggy and diffused, was you've got to cut the budget. Let's not talk about that. Here's the reality. This is all we have left. This is all the money that we have. Now, it's painful and not good. Not good to cut higher education. Not good to reduce it. To the schools. Not good to not be able to have people on welfare. Not good to see abuse continue. Not good to have enough jail space. All of that's not good. And I don't want my state to go through it, but we don't have any other choices. And so I'm saying, you got to do that. And that was the plan that Larry had, at least from my reading of the newspapers, early in the session. And it got all confused and mixed up. But what's going to happen? It's so clear to me, it'll go out, people vote on it, we'll turn it down. So now we're going to have to suffer with Bill 5, and it's going to be worse. It was really bad this session. It was relatively bad the session before. It's going to be horrendous next session. But we're going to have to go through that. And now, next session, there will be no alternative. You can't say you got to come up with a tax plan, because the people, I mean, this won't go for that. So we're going to have to suffer. The state's going to have to suffer. And Oregonians hopefully will understand we've got a serious problem. And once they understand that, I have no doubt that Oregonians will respond. But they're not in that mood right now. And they don't have that understanding right now. A lot of them are pretty much like you said, well, cut out the fat. That's exactly where they are. And we don't need any taxes. Government will be more efficient. So, anyway, that's my prognosis.
Well, in April of 86, the plan evolved then a little bit more, and there was a it was filed on April 2nd that would scrap the 5% limit increase and permitting an annual tax base increase equal to the annual increase in per capita income, income, which in normal times would promise school districts an automatic annual tax base greater than the 6% allowed by the Constitution now. So I would imagine that the schools love that.
Well, they would love it or not love it. Uh-huh. That concept says is that we will raise budgets according to what the taxpayer can stand. Mm-hmm. If the per capita income is low, that means I can't afford it.
Right.
If the per capita income is high, that means I can afford it. And so that's how it relates. It relates to the taxpayer now. The increase or decrease, whatever it may be, only related to the capability of the taxpayer. And that's what that theory says.
Well, then there. This was part of your plan, and the school finance committee said, and other school interests said that your plan looked better all the time. And
they're betting on per capita income increasing.
Right.
I'm not sure that's been the case.
And the Oregon school administrators said that there was a growing interest in your plan. The turnaround on their opinions was because of this change, I presume. Were there other, any other changes or compromises in the plan that?
No, actually, I like that last one very well because that's the way the budgets that I was worked with, state budgets.
Mm-hmm.
That was a law that was passed, that the increase in state government couldn't be any more than the per capita income increase in Oregon.
It's the most flexible for the situation?
Yes, obviously during the recession, and very well.
But there was a failure to get enough signatures, right? You only got a quarter of what you needed.
Yes.
And why was that?
Oh, I suppose timing, organization, there's a lot of things involved in that.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say to you, that plan, as it finally evolved, was the one that I was personally very comfortable with.
Mm-hmm. Then along came ballot measure 7, which was the 5% sales tax.
Yeah.
That's
OEA.
That's the OEA.
And that was due to failure from the time they started. They wasted their money.
There were also ballot measures 9, 11, and 12 dealing with state taxes as well. Isn't that right?
I don't remember what those.
Did you support the OEA plan?
No. I left them alone. Mm-hmm. We've gone through the exercise. We've done what we could. OEAs, it was going to fail. They're wasting money. They didn't support ours and went out for their own. It's just dumb.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, apparently they didn't get a lot of editorial support either from that.
Yeah.
And of course, as you said, it failed in November then. Is there anything else on this area, on this plan that you want to say?
No, the only thing is, as I told you earlier, as I went through my speeches, I don't know how many times I came up with, you've got to do something about this.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't. That's not quite right. We didn't successfully.
Was that a major disappointment for you?
Yeah, because I knew we were exposing ourselves to LFI.
Mm-hmm.
And LFI passed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't applaud McIntyre like others applaud it. I'm the kind of a guy that says, okay, if you've got criticism, that's fine, but come up with a constructive solution. He just said, we're going to cut the taxes and you come up with a solution.
All right.
And I don't happen to agree with that to me is not good citizenship.
Well, going on then, also in February of 86 was the National Governors Association meeting in Washington, D.C. And at that time, you met with President Reagan about cuts in the federal spending.
Yeah.
You also had dinner at the White House. What was his response to, what were you saying to him and what was his response?
Talking to the president about something like that is not the way to accomplish it. To me, it was like, I've said this before on a tape, a chicken soup when you're sick, it may not help, but it won't hurt. Before you go see a president, before you get him, what are you going to talk about? You know, what's the subject? You don't go out and just chat with the president.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was just saying, okay, I've got a chance now, I'll talk to the president. But to say that the president called up his office of a bunch of management and say, Vic was just here and he wants you to come here and go do it, I know that doesn't
work. Yeah.
Do
you have to clear things? Do you have to clear things with somebody before you discuss them with the president?
Do I what?
Do you have to clear them? I mean, does it? Is there some kind of a?
You don't talk about. You don't do this in a verbal conversation. This is done by mail.
Uh huh.
So it isn't. You sit down and talk with somebody. Then go talk to the president. Obviously, they're there. If you really want to change the subject, they can't stop you.
Sure.
It's a matter of protocol. I'm not a loose cannon, and I don't do things that way. But at least you got to give it a swing.
Mm-hmm.
And do the best. And it was just a matter of, I know that Oregon cut. I knew how we cut. I knew we did it well. I knew we did it. You know, we suffered through the 82 and 3 special sessions. I figured I was pretty much of an expert on dealing with budgets. And that the federal budget wasn't any different than the state. It just happened to be umpteen times bigger, and they could print their own money. They don't have the same functions, the same control constraints. The fact is that I figured I knew about cutting budgets. And I couldn't get into that kind of a detail, but we talked about it. There were ways to do this, and here's the way you can get it done. Well, there was a effort by the National Governors Association, and you know, what have you done that would be improvement in how you manage government and do good ideas that would cost less to do certain programs. So governors submitted it. We submitted a whole bunch, but in that book itself, Oregon, our recommendations appeared 3 or 4 times. Other governors maybe once, and some governors not at all. So we proposed things. If anybody read it, his director of management and budget, he took some of those things pretty seriously. I don't know how much he could execute it, but he thought they were good ideas. I'm trying to think of his name right now, and I can't. He was good. But anyway, that's the best you can do. The dinner at the White House, that's typical. That happens every time. You go back, and the president always invites you, the governors, that is, and spouses to the White House. We have dinner. Very interesting.
Was it enjoyable?
Yeah, it's always enjoyable. The format is you kind of gather, have some drinks, and then you go into dinner, and everybody's assigned before you go. And beautiful, great table number, whatever. And they have cabinet officials and people like that, ambassadors and so forth, that would sprinkle themselves around by the table. So that you always have some kind of a dignitary. It's interesting in the sense that they have plenty of waiters, waitresses, and you're sitting around, and all of a sudden, zingo, and everything, like a salmon, all delivered to everybody, and we chit chat, and pretty soon, zingo, all the dishes go, and when they serve, incidentally, the entree, it is not on a plate. They bring you the plate, but the entree is on a tray, and they go around the table, and it's meat, potatoes, and vegetables and whatever, they just serve the tray at the table. And everything is very orderly. There's music, there's a military band of some kind, violins and things come in. The chairman of the I'm trying to think of the protocol who comes first. But both speak a little bit, the chairman of the governor's conference and the president. When that happens, all of a sudden the doors open and here comes a TV and all these people and the lights go on and then it finishes and away they go. And there's some kind of deal on the ceiling where they open up and TV lights come on. And afterward, you go for some entertainment. You go to the East Wing. You have dinner in the West Wing, and it's varied. We had part of the cast of Chorus Line. We had vocal entertainers. I'm trying to remember the names. The toughest of the lot was when Carter was president. and he took all of the governor's